This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast. I'm delighted to be talking to Professor Jennifer Petrolieri today, all about couples that work and whether it really is possible to keep your relationship and your sanity when you're both committed to your careers. Jennifer is Associate Professor of Organisational Behaviour at INSEAD. In October last year, she published her first book, Couples That Work, which is a fascinating study of a topic that's very close to my heart. I picked up the book thinking it would be all focused on couples with children and how to navigate those first years when it feels like you're trying to carry a jelly on a toothpick, as well as keep your job and your sanity intact. But one of the biggest surprises for me was that, yes, of course, for a couple who both have commitments to their careers, having children adds very specific new considerations and pressures, from the logistical, who's doing the pickup, to the strategic, who will be the prime carer. But having a successful career and being in a happy relationship comes with so many other considerations, and that almost doesn't matter where you are in terms of childcare and having children. Jennifer talked to 113 couples in her research for this book. The average age was 44, I think. And I'm really looking forward to discussing some of what she found in that research today. Jennifer, welcome. Thank you very much for your time today. And I found your book absolutely fascinating. I couldn't Thank put it you. Down, which for, you know, I think is quite a surprise for me for a fairly academic, researchy type book. The thing, I guess the scales just fell from my eyes when you talked about the three different transitions, because I hadn't really noticed the first one, and I feel like I'm smack bang in the middle of the second. Could you just talk for our listeners a bit more about those three different transition phases?
Yeah, of course. So what I found in the research was that although it can be a struggle for dual career couples, it's not always a struggle. And there are three points, or what I call in the book transitions, which are particularly tough going for working couples. So in brief, the first one, transition one, comes early in our relationship, really the first time we need to make a big decision together. So this might be a career move, you know, one of us gets offered a job on the other side of the country or abroad. You know, what do we do? Do we go together? Whose career takes priority? These kind of questions. For some couples, it might be the arrival of a first child. You know, how are we going to mesh our careers together now we have this other lovely thing we need to look after? For couples who maybe get together later in life after a first relationship has broken down, that might be around, do we blend families from first relationships and how do we manage that? And what happens when couples face these first big decisions is really the decision is about how are we going to structure our lives in a way that both of us can keep our careers going and have a decent relationship. You know, very stressful time for couples, lots of decisions to be made. And I'm sure we'll dig into that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's the first transition. And I sometimes think of this as the moment when we become a couple. Mm-hmm. The second transition comes at the stage where you and I both are now, which is mid-career. And it's a time when we tend to step back and think about our direction. And this often begins as those little nagging questions, you know, am I in the right career? I'm not sure this job is good for me. You know, am I living a life worth, you know, well spent? And often quite quickly, it becomes more blown up into quite big existential questions. You know, what do I really want out of life? Is this the right direction? You know, what am I doing with my life? And then the third transition comes at a time when our social roles are changing. So if we think of our roles in our careers, we're no longer the bright young things that in that career acceleration phase, we're sort of plateauing. Mm. So I remember one guy said to me, you know, I knew I was in this transition when I went for a promotion and I realized that my competitor was my protege who was 10 years younger than me. A big shock to the system. Likewise, if we've been parents, our social roles are changing there because they're probably leaving home. We're no longer those active parents. So it's a time when we really have a series of questions around identity. You know, who am I now? I'm not that bright young thing blasting through the career. I'm not that hands-on parents. And how are we as a couple going to think about our purpose going forward for this last portion of our careers? So that's just a snippet of each transition.
Yeah, I thought it's so interesting, and it also seems to be from, you know, people I'm sure we all know, but certainly people I know, you can almost pinpoint exactly every transition you've identified seems to be where we know someone who or other who hasn't Absolutely. Quite made it in their couples and they end in divorce.
Yeah. And I think these couple, I think what happens at these points are one of three things. Either, unfortunately, they become the undoing of our couple, which, you know, does happen. Mm. Or we can sort of muddle through them and craft a path that works, but is pretty bumpy. Or if we tackle them in a good way, and my hope with the book is that it helps people to tackle them in a good way, we can come out of them in a better space in our relationship and a better space in our career. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found most hopeful about my research, is that yes, these periods are very tough. And yes, if we don't do them right, they can lead to the end of our relationship and to really significant career troubles. But if we get them right, they can also be periods where we can reinvent ourselves in our career and also renew our relationship.
Mm. Yeah, certainly that was one of the things that I took away as someone who seems to go every 10 years sort of veering from one great career idea to another. It actually gave me a bit of an explanation as to why that's happening, and also made me feel like I'm not the only one. I love this idea you talk about, the zero sum or a positive sum relationship. Can you explain a bit more about that and why it's so important?
Yeah, I think this is such an important thing I found is that, and it's really about mindset, you know, what's the lens through which we view our relationship and our career? And I think a lot of the media and the way we're taught to think about relationship is zero sum, which is also the way we think of give and take, right? I give a bit and you take a bit. Mm-hmm. The problem with this conception is it means, you know, there's essentially a pie, and if I get a bigger slice, you get a smaller slice. And of course, this creates a winner and a loser. And we know in relationships, while there needs to be give and take, and there needs to be some sacrifice, if we see the relationship through that lens, through that mindset, essentially we build up resentment in the relationship, because there's always a winner and a loser when at each decision point. And of course, if you're the loser too often, or your partner's the loser too often, this is not going to lead to a happy relationship. What I found was that there were other couples who viewed their relationship in a positive sum game, which meant that each decision was an opportunity to make a bigger pie for both of them. Now, this didn't necessarily equate to a win-win situation. It's not that we never have to sacrifice. It's not that we never have to give things up for our partner. Of course we do. This is a real relationship. But instead of saying, this is my career opportunity, I really want it, thinking, okay, I have this opportunity. Is there a way we can use it that will benefit us both, that will benefit the couple? How can we frame this in a way that it creates an opportunity for both of us? Again, not in a kind of Pollyanna-ish, everything's wonderful way, but in a really real way. So let's imagine someone like yourself who's made major career transitions. You know, if your partner gets a big promotion, which maybe involves a bit more work, you could look at that and think, poof, that's going to be a strain on the family. I'm going to have to take up more slack. You can also look at it and say, yes, but it also may buy us the option for me to change career in the future, buy us some financial stability, which means that next time round, I can make a transition, take a risk that perhaps I couldn't have done if that didn't happen. Exactly the same situation, but a very different way of looking at it. And what I found is that if we can try and look at decisions and opportunities as to how they might affect the whole of our family system, first of all, we're more likely to make better decisions and more likely to be satisfied with those decisions and our relationship coming out of them.
Mm. Yeah, I think that was the key to it, wasn't it? That you talk about with all your research, it isn't a push me, pull you. And I know you have a particular view on this idea of, oh, but I'm making a compromise, and the negative connotations around that. But you don't see these things as compromises through your research, do you? You see them?
Well, I think some people see them as compromises. Mm. I think there's a difference between a compromise, and this comes to this tit for tat, right? I give you this, you give me that. Mm. At the end of the day, we usually feel like, we often feel like we've come away with the rough end of the stick, as opposed to a willing sacrifice, which is, okay, I realize this may cost me something, but I can see a long-term benefit for us. Mm-hmm. And I think when we frame it as that and we feel, yes, I'm giving something up in the short term, but I can see that this is going to be good for us in the long term, it's very different from saying, I'm going to take the hit because I know it's what you want. Then there's mm-hmm. nothing in it for me apart from feeling good about myself because I compromised for you.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to say as well, because obviously we're two women sitting here and probably the audience is going to be majority women, but you very much focus on couples, or your research throws up couples who are where it is not always the woman taking the smaller share of the pie, as it were.
Absolutely. And I think as women, we do ourselves a disservice when we assume that's the case. It really is not the case. And it's not just in the younger generation, it's not the case. It's also in our generation and the older generation. And I think it's very important to think, and it doesn't just link to who earns the most. Let me give you an example. I was working with a couple and he was a CEO. Okay. So very powerful, very successful guy, very high status. And his wife was an entrepreneur. She earned a lot less than him. She really enjoyed her job. And I spoke to him, and it's easy on the surface to look at them and see, and think, oh, well, she took up the slack at home, you know, and he went after his big job. But I spoke to him and he said, you know, Jennifer, I feel like a failure. And I thought, how can that be? Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, this is not what I wanted to do with my career. I know I've been successful. I've been very privileged. I've been lucky. But all I've done every day is get up and carry on that treadmill because I felt like I had to be the one winning the bread. You know, my wife wanted this entrepreneurial career, and as we know, it's risky. So someone needed the stable income. And so I actually feel quite resentful of my wife. Mm. And I think it's a really important lesson, because what we see from the surface of a couple is never what's happening underneath. Mm. And it's never quite as simple as the one who earns the most, or the one who has the most powerful position, is the one who gets the most from a couple.
You talk about a couple exactly like that in your book, don't you? Who on the outside world, they look like the high flyers who have everything, certainly professionally, yeah. And then they have a very personal tragedy, don't they?
And I think, you know, one of my colleagues says nothing can immunize you from life. You know, this particular couple lost a baby. And I think, you know, this, maybe not that tragedy, but all of us have faced things like this. You know, things seem to be going well, and then suddenly, you know, the major health scare, somebody dies, there's an issue with our children, and, you know, we get fired. And I think the measure of a good couple is not, do we face challenges? Right? It's what do we do when we face those challenges? And I think, again, this is the risk of looking at other couples. You know, I think the media, particularly the British media, you know, we're obsessed with George and Amal Clooney, right? We put them on a pedestal. Well, who knows what their life is like? We have no idea. Mm. And I think very often when you lift the lid on couples who look all shiny from the outside, that's the reality of their lives. You know, they're everyday couples like us, struggling with the challenges that we face, that everyone face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's better just to walk out in your track pants and your hummus smeared leggings. Bear it all for everybody.
Yeah.
I was really fascinated also by Wolfgang and Heidi, who are a couple in your book. And I think they will be very identifiable, certainly for the Careering into Motherhood Facebook audience that I have. Can you talk a little bit about where they find themselves and how they get in and out of the situation?
Yeah, so I loved this couple. And I think they were a couple that many of us can identify with for many different reasons. So in many ways, postcard relationship, you know, lovely young couple, get married, have kids. And they took a decision which less couples are taking these days, but certainly in the days of we probably had children, many couples were, which was the husband pushed forward on his career and Heidi, she still kept her career, but just went at a slightly slower pace. Mm. And honestly, for the first 10 years, that was great. That suited them, right? She wanted to invest a bit more at home, someone needed to earn more money, that was him. But they got to a point where it just wasn't working anymore. You know, he was really quite desperately unhappy in his career. He wanted a transition, but he felt he couldn't afford it, right? He's the breadwinner for the family. Mm. Likewise, the children are getting older. She wants to step up in her career, but she felt like a lot of the burden at home was on her. Mm. And so if we look at their situation, they really got to the point where they were really quite unhappy in their careers and in their relationship, because they really weren't talking about the root of this. But of course, when they started to unpick it, they saw that their dilemmas were mirror images of each other, right? Both needed the other to change. Mm. You know, to step up, Heidi needed Wolfgang to make a transition. And to make a transition, Wolfgang needed Heidi to step up. Mm-hmm. And so in many ways, they were in the perfect situation. If she can step up at work mm-hmm. and earn a little more money, it enables him to make that transition and take a bit more of the burden at home. Mm-hmm. But of course, what that meant for them was that they would have to challenge those traditional gender roles. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a perfect reversal. It wasn't as if she never saw the kids again and he was a full-time, you know, house husband. But still, they had to readjust that balance. And I think, like many couples, when they face this, there's two things they're struggling with. One is how to make that readjustment practically. And second is how to manage with, you know, the well-meaning, but frankly, very upsetting comments from family, friends, et cetera, et cetera. And these can range from, you know, your mother who calls you like, can your husband cope? Which is quite derogatory, honestly, for most of them these days. To, you know, the best mates of the husband who are like, oh, you're not wearing the trousers anymore, these kind of comments. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, we're not in the 1950s, completely unnecessary, but they're actually quite, and you know, when we listen to it, if we're not in that situation, it's easy to think, oh, just ignore it. But actually, it's quite difficult psychologically to deal with that in the couple and still make that big transition.
Yes, yeah. And I think I'm right in saying he wants to go and do something freelance, doesn't he? He wants to step out and build his own business, which is obviously a huge leap of faith, and you need your confidence to go out and do something like that. So it can be very hard.
Yeah. But I think the other learning from this couple is the reason they could both do it is because of their relationship. Mm. And I think so often we think about careers and we think about them in isolation. When we talk about career transitions or career moves, we look as if you're flying solo, no strings attached. But that's not the reality. And it's not the reality, not only in the way that you have some constraints, it's also not the reality that most of us in relationships also have an amazing backstop, right? We have someone else who earns money, so it's not all on us. Mm. We have someone else who maybe understands the business world, understands the corporate world, and can support us, give us advice, be a sounding board. And I think it's time we recognized how powerful a support mechanism our couples can be, as well as, oh, and we need to do the washing up and all these things. And the reality is it's both, right? They're a constraint, but they're also an incredibly powerful driving force behind our careers.
Mm. Yes. And that just wanted to talk about that, you know, the washing up and the domestic load, if you like. One of the key themes that came out when I told the members of the Facebook group that I would be doing this interview, what kind of things would they be interested in? One of the absolute key themes that came up was, how do you balance the domestic load? Now, again, bearing in mind that I suspect most of our audience are, as we talked about, in that phase two, where it does feel very, very hectic when you've got preschoolers and early, you know, young children, and you're trying to keep your career on track, and you know, you can't deal with toys all over the floor and and the like.
I mean, yeah, it is a stressful thing, and I think there's two things I would say about it. First of all, I mean, I'll talk about in a moment about how we can deal with it, but let me first say, when couples are arguing about who should buy the milk, that's never what they're arguing about. And I think it's really important we take a step back from the practicalities. I'll talk about how to solve them in a minute.
Yes.
But also, the practicalities are very often a red herring for some other issue. And the issue tends to be whose career takes priority and who has the power in this relationship. And what I find in couples is that if we always only focus on the practicalities, we don't have those conversations, and that eventually trips us up. So I want to say that as a warning, and now I'll talk about how to fix the practicalities. Of course, the practicalities are important. We need to get rid of them. And I will give some advice, but I will also say again, this is still not going to help you win the battle, right? This is like this is the thing you need to solve. But even if you do all of this perfectly, your relationship and career could still fall apart if you're not addressing those bigger questions. So I think there's a couple of things. The first is the benefit of being in a working couple is we can have a little bit more flexibility with money. Now, we're not all wealthy by any means, but it's really important to think about what is the value of your time. And a lot of research on this shows that if we can spend a little bit more of our money on outsourcing the jobs we dislike, it will save us emotionally a lot. So first strategy is to outsource what you can and what you really dislike. So let me give you an example. I absolutely hate ironing. It is worth a lot of money for me to outsource that ironing for my kind of psychological well. We all have those things, right? There are other things I love. So that's one thing, is to really don't dismiss the kind of outsourcing policy, whether that's a clean or whatever. It's really, really helpful, particularly at that pinch time when we have small children, you know, particularly at that pinch time. The second thing is the most successful strategy seems to be divide and conquer. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean, it's not helpful if this week or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's your turn to do whatever task, and the other days it's their turn to do whatever task. It seems to work better if you say, okay, I am always in charge of ABC and you're always in charge of XYZ. Let me give you a personal example from my husband and I with the children, right? When it comes to their friends, birthday parties, play dates, all that sort of stuff, I do everything. I know the parents' names. I have all the emails. I have all the phone numbers. It's my domain. When it comes to holidays, when it comes to sports, when it comes to anything medical, doctors, dentists, my husband's taking care of it. What that means is that it's very clear who does what. So first of all, nothing falls through the cracks. The second thing is the stress most often does not come from doing the task. It most often comes from managing the task. And I'm sure you will identify with this. It's the to-do list that's running in your brain that's driving you crazy. It's not actually putting the clothes in the washing machine. That's a 30-second, you know, I put them in, I switch it on, it's done. It's not actually, and it tends to be, it's not the doing, it's the managing. And so when we divide very clearly, it really takes the load off us, because also it's the same in work. When it's very clear what our responsibility is, we get the job done easier, it's less stressful. It's exactly the same in the home. Now, there may be some jobs you want to not divide and conquer. So both my husband and I love cooking. So, you know, we both take do a bit of that each. But for most things, that tends to be the best strategy, is to list all the household tasks, go through one by one, you know, pick the ones you like most, whatever, and divide it in the way that works for you, and then forget about it. You know, I am never thinking about the next dentist appointment, the vaccination schedule. I know it's taken care of. And so it's just off my mind, which is incredibly freeing.
Yes. Yeah. Makes absolute sense. And the other thing, which, you know, plays into the idea of transitions and so on, but you don't see, am I right? You don't see the, you know, anything you agree right now is set in stone forevermore. There is a period, and I know you talk about having these kind of semi-regular planning sessions where you maybe recalibrate, reevaluate, and then go off again. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think if you think about it, it would be very strange if what you want and what worked for you as a couple in your early 30s was the same as what you wanted and what worked for you in your early 40s or early 50s. I mean, that it doesn't make sense. Mm. And yet so many couples have some really great conversations about what they want, their ambition, all this sort of stuff. And then 5 years later, they've never talked about it again. Mm. And not surprisingly, they're waking up thinking, life is not quite turning out how I want it. Mm. Now, at the same time, this isn't about talking about it every evening. That would get a little bit tiresome. But certainly a couple of times a year to check back in on, you know, understanding really three things. What do we really want out of life? You know, what are our ambitions? What matters most? What are we aiming for? Secondly, you know, what are the boundaries? How are we going to split the housework? How practically are we going to make this work? And what are our decision criteria? And third, you know, what are the things we might be worried about might happen? It's just a really healthy check-in and a way to make sure you keep on track. Because just like in anything in life, if we're very clear about where we're going, it's easier to stay on track, right? If we're not clear, or we've talked about it a couple of years ago, but I can't quite remember what we said, you know, we veer off course, and that's where things start to go wrong, both in our careers and in our couple. And so I think having those conversations a couple of times a year and at every major transition point. So if one of you gets offered a new job opportunity, obviously a baby comes along, something happens, you know, in the family ecosystem, you know, a training course come up, whatever these things are, it's helpful to revisit those conversations.
The other thing I know in the same section in the book, you do talk about when you get your list together, strip out the stuff that really is just unnecessary. Do you have to have a constantly perfectly tidy kitchen? Yeah. And I really want to touch on this idea of perfection versus good enough. I'm sure my parents won't mind me saying that I'm sure when they were in the thick of things, good enough, you know, was good enough. But these days it doesn't seem to be. When did it change and why?
Yeah, it's a good question and it's awful. I'm not entirely sure when it changed. I think it changed in the last decade or two decades. But I think it's really important to get back to the psychology. So when we think about parenting, there's a very famous developmental psychologist called Donald Winnicott, one of the most important developmental psychologists. And he suggested this idea of the good enough mother. And his idea was that the most healthy children do not have mothers who are perfectionists. They have mothers who are trying their best, but are also relaxed around the edges. You know, if things don't go to plan, if, you know, the dinner burns, it's kind of okay. Mm-hmm. And what he found was that in our parental roles, when we can be good enough, that is actually the best thing for the child. And lo and behold, it's the best thing for us as adults. When we aim for perfection, first of all, it's an ideal that we never get there, right? There's always another cupboard you could clean out or whatever it happens to be. It's impossible to reach it. And secondly, it puts us on a treadmill, which is incredibly stressful. And you know, the same thing as adults, if we can get to a good enough standard, it's much healthier place psychologically to be.
It was interesting with one of my other guests, we were talking about the role of social media in promoting that kind of perfect image and perfect life. And I know social media gets blamed with a lot of things, but I do wonder if that's part of it.
I mean, I think social media is part of it, but I also think it's about the relationships we have with other people. Mm. Are we honest about the struggles we have? You know, and sometimes I think we can be very British and say, yes, everything's fine, as opposed to, you know what, I've had such a stressful day, I've not quite managed to have a shower yet today. Mm-hmm. You know? And I remember I had two children under two, and if I could achieve a shower by lunchtime, it was a good day. And I think we tend not to share those stories, which is that which is harming us all. So I don't just think it's social media. I think it's the interpersonal relationships we have as well. And are we willing to be open about our struggles? Or are we trying to present that, you know, good housekeeping, perfect house to our friends, and which is quite inauthentic, really.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely. If you ever came around to my house, you'd see. Thank you. It's been absolutely fascinating to talk about the book, Couples That Work. It's available on Amazon, and I'm sure, as they say, from all good bookshops. But it really is full of really practical advice, as well as just being hugely interesting. I've got three final questions, which I'm like to asking all of our guests. What has been the impact of having kids on your career?
So I'm going to say something that maybe sounds a bit controversial. I think it's been incredibly beneficial for a couple of reasons. One is there's nothing like the focus you get from knowing that every moment you're here, you're not with the kids, right? So I think my productivity per hour has gone up. That I like to think of my kids as a productivity function. But I think it also has helped to put my life and my work in perspective. You know, I'm someone who's very career driven, which I don't see as a bad thing. But I think when you are very driven, you need to also be grounded. And I think the kids are, you know, really helpful in keeping me grounded. And the other thing they do is they stop me working all the time, which is incredibly helpful for my creativity. You know, a lot of my job is creativity, and you can't force it. And there's something really helpful to having spent the weekend writing stories or whatever it is with them, and then coming back afresh on Monday and really sort of powering through. Now, I don't want to sound Pollyanna-ish, right? There are also times when it's tough, but I think as a whole, they've had a positive impact on my career.
That's really nice to hear. That's great. And what would you say to a hiring manager who's just interviewed a woman because he's just interviewed a woman he knows can do the job, but in that interview she asked about flexible working policies at the firm? What would your advice to him be?
She will probably be the most productive worker you've ever hired, and that's what the data shows.
Really? Brilliant.
Yes. So the research on this is incredibly clear. When we take what's called predictable time off, when we work flexibly, when we take predictable time off, our productivity increases quite dramatically. And the research here is very cut and dry.
And how can people find out more about you and your work? And I'd also like to know what's next, the success of this book, what comes after?
Yeah. A holiday. No. So people can find out more at my website, which is www.jpetrolieri.com. And what's next, writing-wise, is my children and I are writing a children's book together. So that's the next writing project that I'm very excited about. And this next year is really about getting the word out about the book. And then I'll definitely continue working in this space on the sort of intersection of careers, relationships, and how we can live lives in which we can thrive.
Well, fascinating. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
Thank you for having me on.
That was such a great episode with Professor Jennifer Petrolieri. I really enjoyed talking to her. We talked about the three transitions that people tend to go through in their lives, especially in couples and in careers, and how they're all actually quite natural, and none of them last forever, but planning for them can really help give you that upper edge. We also talked about how to plan your domestic share, and again, how to move that around the other commitments that you have and work more as a team in your family. We talked about societal views of gender norms and gender roles and how hard they can be to change. And we talked about this idea of perfection versus good enough. And Jennifer talked about how actually it's also been scientifically proven that the good enough actually benefits us as humans and benefits our children. And then my favorite part, we talked about how flexible working is actually proven to be more productive. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Careering into Motherhood podcast.